Welcome back to Between the Bar Lines. I'm your host, Dr. Maeve Barry. I hope you are enjoying Season 5 thus far. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the other episodes from either this season or previous seasons, I highly suggest that you do, and also ask a friend to do the same. I appreciate it. Today, we are going to talk about piano music in the 19th century. I will also mention some important composers, but we have some time this season to talk more in depth about these composers, so I will only really be mentioning key points in this episode about them. In the early 1800s, the piano was undergoing a transformation, both physically and culturally. The instrument evolved from the lighter forte piano of Mozart's time that we heard to the powerful dynamic grand pianos that we recognize today. And this is really thanks to the innovations of the piano makers like Erard and our friend Steinway. Composers now had access to a much wider range of tones, a more responsive touch at the key, and a greater volume for the instrument overall. And instead of this instrument being perfect for salons or small gatherings at these royal courts, it was now perfect for filling concert halls and expressing a much deeper emotion than it was able to before. Let's talk a little bit about the star composers who redefined piano music with this new instrument. Friedrich Chopin is our first composer, sometimes known as the poet of the piano, and he wrote almost exclusively for the piano. His music is lyrical and quite intimate, something that we recognize from him as his classic pieces that he was composing are his nocturnes, mazurkas, and preludes. These pieces were nationalistic in a way, and we'll talk a little bit more about nationalism at the end of this episode, but these works had this huge emotional depth, and it was often tied to his Polish heritage and his lifelong exile from his homeland. I don't want to get too into the weeds talking about Chopin, but growing up, I always thought that he was a French composer. And I think that other people also think this because that's kind of where he was floating around when he was doing all of this composing. But he is Polish, and that music shines through in those aforementioned pieces. Now, on the other side of the spectrum was Franz Liszt, and we can call him the original rock star of the piano. This guy was going out playing all these virtuosic things, so he was known for his technique, his dramatic flair, and his show-stopping performances. Liszt was the person who turned the piano into a recital spectacle. But he was more than just a performer. He was a composer at that, and also a generous teacher of the craft, and the pioneer of the symphonic poem. So his late piano works like Nuage Gris are eerie and very much ahead of their time. So this is almost echoing modernism here and almost echoing impressionism that we see in the French composers coming up in the next era. Then we can go back to talk about our friend Robert Schumann. He can be classified as a characterful composer whose compositions were really based around his own identity and his personal feelings. So we have a piece called Carnival, and he created characters like Florestan and Eusebius to represent the fiery and the dreamy sides of his personality. So because of this, his music was often autobiographical, and there are scholars who have really cracked the code on all of these messages and literary references that he has left behind in his music, and that's really cool. We also can't forget about Clara Schumann. She was a huge part of Robert Schumann's success, being one of the only women at the time to break into a male-dominating field. And she was a brilliant pianist in addition to being the wife of Robert Schumann. But she also has many, many compositions, some of which are piano compositions. My favorite is her piano sonata. The second movement of that is just stunning. And obviously, her art songs are also some of my favorite, but we'll talk about her a little bit later. In addition to touring around her husband's music and her music, she also helped with Brahms and bringing his works to the world. And speaking of Brahms, he's another one of these star composers whose piano works are like monuments. They're humongous, complex, noble, and really rooted in a tradition. So almost a classical tradition, yet he expanded the roles of classicism and added that romantic flair. He really was seen as the heir to Beethoven, and some scholars have written this out a couple of times, but apparently Brahms said that every time he composed, he felt the ghost of Beethoven standing behind him. Despite this, his music really does have its own voice. It's very warm and rich and full of colors, but it's often tinged with a melancholy. And we'll talk more about Brahms and the Schumanns, but maybe there's some kind of melancholy in that little triangle of people. We'll see. So the 19th century was really a time of national awakening across Europe. Music became a tool for expressing identity. I said earlier about Chopin using the Polish dances like the mazurkas and the polonaises to really just get into his cultural roots. Liszt also was drawing from his roots with Hungarian folk melodies. And other composers that I haven't mentioned in this episode but are still important to Romanticism as a whole, like Edvard Grieg, and we have Dvorak and Mussorgsky, they later were following suit, infusing their music with the rhythms and the harmonies of their countries. So we can clearly see that piano music in the 19th century was really important and is important to remember because of how much the instrument changed physically, and also because of that physical change, it influenced the composers who were composing music for it. In our next episode, I am really excited to speak about two women, both of which are fabulous pianists and composers, and this is Clara Schumann and Fanny Mendelssohn-Hensel. Join me next time on Between the Bar Lines.